Blog Talk Radio.
For tuning in again. The support is always much appreciated. And I'm going to check and see if we have online our guest for today, Worshipful Brother Dan Graham. Are you with me? Bear with me. We'll get this sorted out in just a second. It's interesting times around the world. Our communities are hold on. Let's put this call through again to this fellow. Let's see if we can get him live and on air. That'll be a nice, a pleasant surprise for the fellow.
Phone number, I'll call you back as soon as possible. Thank you.
Yeah, Dan, it's Dale. We'll get you to, I'll put a call through to you in just a minute and call back. Cheers. At least we have Louis Armstrong in the background to regale us. Well, we know we have a flood of information coming. We just have to, and this will be worth your while. There's no question about that. Do I have Dan with me?
If you're happy with your message, hit 1. To listen to your message, hit 2. To erase it and record again, hit 3. To keep recording from where you left off, hit 4. Hit 1. To record your message, hit 2.
We're just running into a little bit of a technical glitch, you know? Isn't that always the way?
Thanks for calling Dan Graham. I'm not available to take your call at this time, but if you'll leave me a detailed message and a phone number, I'll...
Here, I'll do it the other way. We'll give him the guest call-in number, and he can take it from there. Eh? Let's see. Hmm. Here, we'll try this. While we're waiting, eh? Where are my manners? I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Yeah, it's the call's right through New York. No, I'll dial you again. How's that? Yeah, I've got it showing up here, so I'll do that. All right, thanks then. Cheers. Yes,
how you doing?
Have I reached you? Finally. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll just get rid of this music that we're listening to. Little Sade in the background.
Nice.
There we go. How are you this morning?
Good.
Excellent. Now we're going to... We're live and on air, so I'll edit out this first part.
Okay.
And we'll just jump into, maybe we should actually ease into a bit of a discussion. And I'll start with introducing you as my guest, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Sure. Sounds good.
With a bit of an introduction. So.
Okay.
That said... Hello, everybody, and today we have a very special guest, a fellow Mason, Daniel, Dan Brown Graham. Dan Graham has been an enthusiastic, optimistic, and progressive Mason from as far back as my first memory of the fellow, and it is an absolute pleasure to have you with us this morning. Dan, and I'd like you to begin by explaining a little bit about your involvement, how long you've been involved, and how long you've been a Mason, and a bit of give us a bit of a sense of what you see going on that's interesting you right now.
Well, Dale, it's always a pleasure to speak with you and to hear you speak. I always enjoy our chats. And I've been a Mason now for about 10 years, and I'm a past master here in Waterloo District. My mother lodge is Waterloo Lodge, and I'm also this year the director of ceremonies at Tempum Lucius, one of our two observant lodges, and I'm also the assistant secretary of our research lodge in the jurisdiction, Heritage Lodge. So between those things and traveling around, that's kept me quite busy.
Now, what's propelling your interests lately? What's caught your eye that is helping you to stay focused?
Well, you know, my biggest interest in the craft right now. First of all, my interest in masonry is through my family. My relatives in Glasgow, Scotland, have been masons, tracing all the males in our Graham family back to the mid-1800s, all members and masters of a lodge called Oatlands 1005 in Glasgow. And so masonry's been in our family for a long time. And so I always knew I would be a mason, but I understood from an early age with my dad and my uncles what a commitment it was. And I knew that when I got involved, it wouldn't be on a casual basis. So I chose to wait till later in life, till my kids were grown and married and out of the house. And so that allowed me the time to actually put into it. And I was lucky enough to have a mentor who was a past grandmaster, Ray Daniels, Most Worshipful Brother Ray Daniels. He was my music teacher in grade 7 and 8, and then he was my daughter's high school teacher. And so I saw him over the years, and then when I saw him at lodge one day as the grandmaster, it was we reconnected, and he had a real interest in young masons and what was bringing people to the craft. He saw that we needed to do more. And so maybe through some of Ray's influence, I became really interested in what I call retention. I thought was the biggest issue that we faced. And I got into masonry again because of my family initially. But what's kept me in masonry is not only the great lessons that I learn in Lodge and the work that we do at Lodge, but almost more importantly, certainly equally as important, it's allowed me the opportunity to meet and be friends with like-minded people. And I think that's really a part of masonry that we undersell. You know, where can you go and be guaranteed to walk into a room where, you know, 98% of the people think like you do, have the same moral values and stuff like you do? There's really not a lot of organizations that you can join where you can get that comfort and freedom to be yourself. And masonry, for me, has been just that. So I worked with Ray initially. He asked for my thoughts on this. And I said, well, you know, we do an awful lot of first degrees, and then sometimes we don't see those people back. And it seems like we're wasting those nights when people don't come back. And maybe we should do a better job of making sure that people want to be masons for the right reason. Now, I mean, you referenced Dan Brown with my name. And it's funny because the Dan Brown effect on masonry, which a lot of people thought was positive, and I suppose in a lot of ways it was, it also had a bit of a negative thing with masonry because people, you know, wanted to learn the secrets of the world and that they were going to, you know everything. And of course, that's not what masonry is about. It's not a secret society. And so I think people got interested in getting into the craft for maybe the wrong reasons, and then didn't stay when they realized that it was more than that. And I think we were eager to accept those people because they were live, breathing members that we thought we could show them the value in masonry. But I think now, especially at our Grand Lodge here in Canada, we're taking a more tactical approach now, and actually trying to deliver what young masons and young men are looking for. And not, when I say young, I'm not just referring to age. We have lots of men my age joining the craft as I did after their families are grown. And we need to be sensitive to that to make sure that we're letting them see the value of masonry and not underselling it. So that's really my interest right now. That's what I'm focused on.
We're experiencing sort of the ebb and flow of membership. This is not just within the framework of the Masonic Brotherhood, but we see it reflected around the world in organizations. And yet here in this part of the world, we're in a young nation where our population is still building. When you were talking, it made me wonder if Masonry is hundreds of years old, it occurs to me that people may have some notion that we've survived this long by being sort of a very conservative group of people, and yet to the progress of the organization suggests just the opposite, that it's been adaptive, not only in this part, in this culture and in this environment, but it has a global application. Is there been a change, or is there a change in that shift between progressive ideas and the progression of the philosophy of Freemasonry and this shift around us toward a more conservative world out there?
I think so. I think, you know, I can certainly speak for what our Grand Lodge is doing. I think as all Masons know, Masonry has been slow to accept change, but like all things, change is inevitable. And, you know, there is that belief, which is perfectly valid, that, you know, it's the oldest fraternity in the world. It's more than 300 years old, as we know, and it's an ancient way of doing things. And if it's worked this way for that long, you know, why do we need to change it? And of course, so the thing isn't really as much change as adapt. You know, it's like you know, years ago, the cavemen needed to get food from the source to the cave. And so they would drag it or carry it or whatever before the wheel. And then the wheel was invented. They still were moving the stuff. They were just doing it in a more modern, easier way. And I think that's the way we need to look at Masonry. And certainly our Grand Lodge in Canada was slow to adopt the communication tools of the day, you know, email and websites and stuff. But what makes me happy now is that we do have progressive leadership here in our Grand Lodge, and over the past few years and continuing now, that is continuing to improve. And what's more important, there's a plan to go forward. There's actually a plan. It's not being done willy-nilly. You know, we're actually making a plan to change those things. We're not changing Masonry, as our current deputy Grand Master, David, Right Worshipful Brother David Cameron, as he points out, we're not changing Masonry. We're changing the way we do Masonry, and I think those are all valuable things and things we need to do.
It's almost as if we're talking about different facets of the craft. On one hand, Freemasonry itself is intact. The preservation of the ancient landmarks, that contract that sparked a Grand Lodge in the very first instance, still carries on. We pass on the dignity of the craft to future generations. On the other hand, we have this notion that, or this aspect that I think of as more the craft work. And the craft work is where we roll up our sleeves and we see variations all over the landscape. we here in this jurisdiction, it's a constant activity. Some ideas are new and fresh ideas are starting all the time. Some of them wither on the vine. Some of them continue on. Because of the amount of activity, we have a difficult time, I think, evaluating what the measure of success is. Is it possible that the measure of success then is this audacity, this willingness to try new ideas in different areas? Is that a part of the nuanced conversation that we have been having, but not so publicly?
That is the key. That is hitting the nail on the head. And I've been also fortunate to do quite a bit of traveling in masonry, not only in our jurisdiction in our country, but abroad. I've been to lodge in the United States. I just got back from Scotland on Sunday and spent time with our friend Bob Cooper, who, by the way, sends his best to you. And my uncles are all still involved. Two of my uncles in Glasgow, one of them is a past provincial grand master, and his brother, let's smoke Hugh, and my uncle Bert was his grand secretary. And they're 88 and 89, respectively, and still involved in their lodges. We went to lodge in Glasgow with them, and their lodges, again, with that tradition. These are lodges that have been around for a long, long time. They're still healthy. They're still vibrant. They own their own buildings. They're not in financial difficulty. Things are good. They're bringing new members into the craft all the time. Things are good. I've also done a lot of traveling and actually am a member, honorary member of a lodge in Matanzas, Cuba. And I can tell you, one of the most exciting things to me was seeing how vibrant and growing masonry is in a country like Cuba. Matanzas is a big city in Cuba, a big town in Cuba, but compared to Canada, it's maybe not that large. It's a city of about 60,000 people, and they have 7 lodges. And in Cuba, you go to lodge basically 51 times a year. So if your lodge meets on a Monday night, you go every Monday night. 4 times the meetings are structured so that one Monday, one meeting is a degree, one meeting is basically what we use as a general purpose, one meeting is education, one meeting is for benevolence. Benevolence is a big part of what they do in Cuba. And in fact, if you've been to Cuba and you've seen those three-wheeled bicycles that go around quite often with elderly people or disabled people, those three-wheeled bicycles are mostly made by Masons. They take old bike parts and they make these trikes for seniors and for disabled folks to get around on. Benevolence is a big, big part. And then when there's a fifth meeting a month, they do whatever they need, usually another degree. And in Cuba, it's quite an honor to become a Mason. They have candidates, they have applications lined up. And in some lodges, it can take up to and more than a year to even have your application accepted. And it's not just it's not an easy process in Cuba to become a Mason. You need to submit with your application a letter stating why you want to be a Mason, why is being a Mason important to you, and what do you bring to that lodge? What things can you share with the lodge to make the lodge better? And you also include a picture, and that letter and your application and your photograph gets passed around to everybody in that lodge, and gets posted on the Lodge bulletin board, and in fact, it's posted on all the Lodge bulletin boards in your district, so that people that, you know you have the opportunity to say that, yes, this is a good man for Masonry. And when you come home from your initiation in Cuba, normally there's a party out in front of your house. You know, there's tables of food outside your house, and there's some music and stuff, and there's a little party going on. It's a big honor to be a Mason in Cuba, and they take their Masonry very seriously. Although, when we look at it, it may not look the same as ours, because as you can imagine, Cuba's a tropical country. They go 12 months a year, including July and August. And there is no air conditioning in lodges. Even in the Grand Lodge building, they don't have air conditioning. So they don't wear suits and ties. And in fact, and Cuba is also a relatively poor country. And so they don't dress like we do here. They wear usually collared shirts, but it can be a golf shirt. They can wear in the smaller towns around. They can wear blue jeans to lodge. Again, in a country like that, it's you know, they're not as formal on the dress. But I'll tell you, the work they do in lodge, and the men that they are, and the seriousness that they take Masonry, is way beyond what we do here. And so that has given me great hope to go to a country where, you know, Masonry was you know, like it was in Canada and the U.S. up until 1959, when the revolution happened. And then when all the churches and stuff were closed down, Masonic lodges were closed. But of course, most lodges continued to meet, you know, behind the scenes, underground. And later on, Fidel Castro, who discovered that his mentor and the man that he based the Cuban Revolution documents and the Communist Party of they say they were communists, but it's a socialist doctrine is what they wrote, all came from the writings of a man named Jose Marti. And for those people that have been to Cuba, any public building you go to, you'll see that little white bust, the little white statue of a guy's head. He's bald with hair on the sides and a big bushy mustache. That's Jose Marti. And Fidel Castro based all of his writings on what the Cuban government would be, based on the socialist writings of Jose Marti. And he found that Jose Marti was a Mason. And so he thought, well, these Masons can't be that bad. And then he realized that a lot of his favorite playwright, his favorite Cuban songwriter, all these people were Masons originally. So he accepted Masonry again and let it open up. And since then, it's always been going on, but it's really flourishing now. And so I think we can learn from countries like that, jurisdictions like that, that have embraced Masonry. And again, they do what they can do. They, you know, not everybody has a suit, so they don't wear suits, and it would be too hot. So, but it's the effort they put into it. And those are the kind of things that I think are refreshing for us to see. You know, every year I take a group of Masons down, and we go down to Cuba, we go to Grand Lodge, we visit the Grand Master. I've known the past three Grand Masters there, and we go to lodges in Havana, and we go to Veradero, and we go to lodges in Matanzas and some of the other towns around. And it's a real eye-opener for our guys, and it gives you an appreciation, first of all, for what we have, and for the enthusiasm that they put into Masonry there, and I think we can learn from that.
Let me pull you back to something you said a bit earlier. As you were describing the process of entrance into the craft in Cuba and in other, we know this happens in other areas. If we applied, let's presume here that we went old school, and the entrance was more carefully defined, and the expectation around commitment to the craft was not something that happened over weeks and months, but perhaps even years, which we're talking about here. Could our jurisdiction, could we handle the impact of that? Let's say we're careful and we deliberate very carefully. We want to create and give those opportunities to good fellows, but if we were to say that now, there's a longer process involved here because we need to be able to deliberate together to explain a bit more about the time commitment, about the effort, and about the, you know, this isn't a hobby, this is a lifetime effort.
Yeah.
The one thing that comes to mind is what would happen if our numbers, if people just became quite discouraged, threw their hands in there and said, well, if you don't, you know, I can go and join all these other service clubs out there, and I can do that immediately. I just walk through the door. I come to your door, and you're saying you want me to wait. Would that have what kind of an impact do you see that having on us? And could we
Yes, I am 100% positive. First of all, here's what I can absolutely tell you. We would be no worse off numbers-wise as we are now. And I honestly and truly believe, and I'll explain it briefly, I believe we would be further ahead. I believe our numbers would be larger and our lodges would be stronger if we were stricter with our recruiting, because we don't recruit, but with our initiation process. And here's why. And this is, it's in Cuba, it's very difficult to get into lodge. And even though to us it sounds cheap, it's very expensive. Keeping in mind that the average Cuban salary is $15 Canadian a month, lodges is expensive. It's something you really have to save for in Cuba. So first of all, I think we sell masonry too cheap here in Canada. I don't think it should be about the money. And when you said about, well, would people just give up and go and join some other organization? Yes, some of them will. And God bless them, and I hope they're happy with what they do, because then masonry isn't for you. If it's not worth putting in the effort to get in, what kind of effort are they going to put in? And make no mistake, masonry is not a one-way street. It's not like going to a movie or a play. It's participation. That's what's needed. I've heard people say, oh, I used to be a Mason. And I go, oh, well, what happened? Oh, I was a member of a lodge for 3 years and nothing happened. I said, well, what did you do? Well, I went to my meeting every month. Okay. So if you only got, you know, did you get involved? Were you involved in any of the Masonichip, you know, child ID programs we do, any of the fundraising things, any of the lodge activities? Did you go to the general purpose meetings, which is basically like the executive meeting of your lodge? No, I never did any of that. Did you interact with any of the other brothers socially? Did you go to any social events? No. Well, of course, it's like anything. You only get out of something what you put into it. If you join a hockey team, a men's rec hockey team, and you don't go to the practices and you don't get involved with the guys, it's not going to be a pleasant experience, and you're going to say, yeah, that was horrible, But it's not hockey's fault. It's because you didn't put in the effort, and it's like that with masonry. If masonry is what you want, and again, maybe people that think they're interested in masonry aren't really interested. So we need to educate those people, and this is what takes the time. And I'm proud to say in our jurisdiction, our Grand Lodge initiated a program called the Five Steps. And, of course, a lot of those things were in a paper that I wrote called Retention in Masonry, edited by Most Worshipful Brother Daniels before he passed. And one, you know, in that paper, I recommended things like, you know, we need to know a Mason, we need to know a man for 6 months before he joins our, before we accept an application. Now, if he is known to one of our brethren, so in other words, if you have a friend, if you're a Mason and you have a friend and you bring your friend to the lodge and you already know this man, then we cut that time in half. But the lodge needs to know him for 3 months, which means he needs to come out to our social activities, our dinners and some of the events we do, and maybe go out for you know, a beer and a hockey game with some of the guys, or play darts or something, or come to one of our social activities. We need to see if this guy is going to be a good fit. Not only are we interested if he's a good fit for us, but also, are we a good fit for him? Are we what he's looking for? And if we're not what he's looking for, that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. If he thinks, if he decides, you know what, I actually wanted to do more service-type stuff. I'm more interested in being a Rotarian or a Kinsman or something. Then there's no shame in that. Those are great organizations, and if that's what you're looking for, thanks for checking out Masonry. But because it wouldn't do any good to have somebody, to bring somebody into the craft that doesn't have an interest and doesn't want to give back. Again, everybody in Masonry is a volunteer, and it takes input to get output. And so we need everybody to participate. And so you get to know the guys before they become a member and they're part of the circle. And the worst thing I hate that we do when we're talking to people about Masonry is, oh, it's only one night a month. Well, I can tell you right now, if you're a Mason and you only come out to lodge one night a month, you're not gonna get anything out of it. And those are the guys who are Masons for a little while and don't continue. You know, in the early stages, you're going to, you know, if you say two or three times a month in the beginning, but let's face it, how many active Masons do you know, Dale? And how often are they home? And that's why it's so important, too, that when we do those meetings with the Masons in their homes, that we talk to their family, you know, their spouses, partners, parents, or whatever. We need to let them know what the, you know, what the commitment is, and give them an opportunity to ask questions. I think one of the things I hear from a lot of the partners, women, you know, the girlfriends and wives of our young members, they laugh and they say, well, you know, when he's at lodge, I know where he is and I know what he's doing, because, you know, and they are encouraged to come out to our social activities where we have activities where the families are welcome, and they get to know and see the kind of men that their husbands are hanging out with and what they do at our lodge. We have a family barbecue every year, and we offer tours of the lodge room to the families, to the kids and stuff, so they know where their husband or boyfriend or daddy is on lodge night. They can visualize that room, and I think that really helps. So it's a two-way street.
Let me ask you another question here. You've established it, at least in my thinking, that Masonry, that isn't about sitting in the audience and watching the ritual go by. It's about being on the stage in all of its variations. Now, that being the case, is there talk to us about the presence of Grand Lodge, at least in my thinking. I feel great comfort with Grand Lodge, but I've wondered. We have a very huge geography here. Much, you know, we could stick France and Britain into the province and still have land left over. Now, that being the case, are the other area in your experience? Are other areas? Do they have a stronger presence of their Grand Lodge across their jurisdiction? Not in terms of the authenticity of the craft, but in terms of access. F- For example, I'm thinking, you know, if we have at the door coming through, I would have great faith in having Grand Lodge appoint people to do those interviews. So we have some standards there that are and a bit of uniformity, although that I would be different than we have today. You see the idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that I would have Grand Lodge officers or Grand Lodge appointed people do it, because I think one of the things that, from what I hear from lodges, is the master is the master of the lodge, and they run their lodge, and they don't like being told what to do by Grand Lodge, and I get that. It's the Big Brother thing, and they want to run their own lodges, and Grand Lodge isn't there to tell lodges what to do per se. Grand Lodge is there to keep the craft and the ritual intact and true. What I think is an important role for Grand Lodge, and it really works out to the same thing you were saying, is Grand Lodge can offer the lodges programs as they are. As I say, we have that 5-step program that Grand Lodge gave us to talk about, you know, what do we do with people that want to become, let's say they want to become Masons. What Grand Lodge can do is put on workshops and make materials available to teach the lodges how to do that for themselves. I see Grand Lodge as more as a guidance tool than an interfering tool. I don't think Grand Lodge should be interfering with the lodges. I think they should be encouraging them and educating them and assisting them when they need help. Certainly if a lodge says to Grand Lodge, hey, listen, we're having some trouble here. Can you help us? I know Grand Lodge would send somebody there to help right away. It's already happening. We have lodges that are having, you know, financial issues and issues with their temples, with their, you know, the homes where we practice our masonry, you know, with all of the law, you know, the accessibility laws and stuff changing. A lot of these Masonic buildings are older, and Grand Lodge is getting involved when asked, but certainly is there to advise. And I think it means a lot more if Grand Lodge is advising and teaching the lodges to do this on their own rather than them doing it for them. Because first of all, it is the lodge's responsibility. These young mates, like when men come into my mother lodge, Waterloo Lodge, they are joining Waterloo Lodge. They're becoming a member of Waterloo 539 in Waterloo, Ontario. They're not actually becoming a member of Grand Lodge until they're a warden or a master. And so it's our duty as a lodge to make sure we're bringing in the right people. And again, Grand Lodge can offer us that assistance and guidance. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, the lodges are being exposed to large shifts in the population around us. There's been a concerted movement around the world from rural to urban to city life. Most of the people in the world will be living very soon will be living in cities. So this the growth here in Ontario hasn't been uniform. We have Toronto at about 2.2 million people. So they're just about half of the population of the whole province. Other areas are still continuing to grow at a slower rate, but we don't have that concentration. And is this do we need to tailor the message of masonry for differently for urban, rural, or the city livers, people living in those different environments?
That's a tricky question, and I'll answer it like this, yes and no. So the reason I would say no is Masonry is masonry. Whether it's a country lodge in Baden, Ontario, or Drayton, Ontario, or some other small town, or whether that lodge is in downtown Toronto or Etobicoke or Scarborough in the middle of a big metropolitan city, the values of masonry that we are selling or promoting need to be the same. And I agree with Right Worshipful Brother David Cameron, our current Deputy Grand Master, that what we need to do is we need to change the way we communicate. So, for instance, when I joined Lodge, a lot of the lodges were still getting their summonses in the mail, by paper, and there was no such thing really as in a lot of the lodges as email. Some of them were using it and some weren't, and that was really frustrating, especially my lodge, Waterloo Lodge. We're in Waterloo, Ontario, which, as people may know, is a technology hub. University of Waterloo is one of the big tech universities in the world, and it's the home of BlackBerry, and University of Waterloo is one of the major recruiters for Microsoft and many of the other high-tech companies. So high-tech is something that's big in our area, and we were getting, university students or young employees from BlackBerry and these other companies joining the lodges, and when they couldn't get their communication by email, they were saying, really? It's, we're in the 2000s, and you're not doing email? So it's the way we communicate, and maybe the pace is different in a smaller rural lodge than it is in a city lodge. But the most important thing is that the rituals and the practices of Freemasonry, as they have been for hundreds and hundreds of years, must be the same at that small lodge in rural Baden as they are at University Lodge in downtown Toronto. So that's the yes and the no. We need to keep the message of masonry and what masonry is and what masonry does the same. Maybe the communication is a little different. Maybe the urban centers need to lead the charge on communication and make things a little easier that way for members that are coming in, and maybe changing some of the things we do. We used to
Can we do both, Dan? Can we do both?
I think we can. Because, again, masonry is masonry, whether you do it in a big city or a small town. The tenets and principles of Freemasonry never change. We're about masonry is really about morals, and that doesn't change whether you're in a city or whether you're in a rural lodge. What differences are in the lodges is they may communicate different. There may be a faster pace in the city lodges, and that's not always true. Some of the small town lodges are, some of the rural lodges are actually quite progressive as well. So I'm not just saying, it's rural and city, but in a general speak, that's the way it is. It's a different way of communicating, and we need to make sure that we're doing what's right for that lodge and those brethren and those men from those areas that are applying to those lodges.
Then let me put you on the spot a little bit about this. The ancient landmarks, the philosophy, the ethics of Freemasonry are valuable today, and they have application today. Now, let's agree that on that. Are you concerned about that kind of a statement losing relevance in our modern period, in this period of rapid social media? Are you concerned?
No, I don't think so. And here's why. Because There are good in masonry in our jurisdiction. Our tagline for masonry is we make good men better, and there are as many good men today, and in urban settings, or as many good men there are there are in rural areas, and I think, and in fact, I think the need is even greater in a way in these urban areas, because life is so fast-paced and rapid, and communication is so rapid. I hear from a lot of these guys, young guys, and I'm sure you do too, Dale, where they really like the fact that in a way they like the tradition of masonry. We had a lodge of discussion a couple of years ago with young masons from our district, and we said, so what are the things you like about masonry? And this is the kind of thing that Ray Daniels used to do. He used to say to young masons, it's the first time we went out for coffee after I was a mason, the first thing he says is, Daniel, what do you like about masonry and what don't you like? And I said, well, geez, I'm really just a fellow craft. I've only been a mason for a few months. I'm not really sure. And he said, no, you can tell me. Tell me what you like and what you don't like. And I did. And so we had young masons at a lodge of discussion, and I was shocked at what they said. These were all like high-tech guys, and they said one of the things they like the most is they like getting dressed up in a suit and a tie or a tux and coming to lodge. And they like the fact that cell phones are left, you know, outside the lodge in their cases, or if they need to, you know, if they have a family thing going, you know, maybe their wife is expecting or something, or they're on call for work, that they have their device in their pocket on vibrate. But they like that when you're in lodge, you're in lodge. You're not hooked up to your phone. You can't look at your phone when you're sitting online. All the things that we thought that they wouldn't like, because they are so casually dressed most of the time, they really liked wearing a suit. They liked getting dressed up, and they liked the ease, and they liked the formality of lodge. They loved the ritual, that old language ritual, which has been unchanged basically for hundreds of years. They like that.
Let's talk just for a moment about this notion of mentorship. We've seen changes over the past 30 or 40 years in the variations in families. Perhaps when you and I were born, we had a more predictable sense of families, particularly in a country like this where we were so, so small. We were, up until the Second World War, we were about 18 million people. And now we're sitting, about 38 million, 37 million?
38, yeah.
But we had a more predictable, traditional sense of family life. The tendency was father would be out working, mother would be home with traditional roles around housekeeping and raising the children. Now, for a lot of reasons, progress has changed the way we think. Education and medical advances have extended opportunities for us. We live longer, and we believe that we're living better, although now we're more aware of more problems. So we'll set that aside. But the role of father, the role of the male in our society, in our culture, in our governments, has undergone, I think, a necessary, inevitable review. And it's not that we're looking at a competition, but we're saying, well, we have underrepresented women in our culture, in our government for a long time, in our sciences, in our reporting, and that day has come to an end. So there's a sense of freshness, but there's also a sense of instability out there. And you wonder, all right, you and I were taught and I know it sounds really cheesy now, that there were certain things that men did intuitively or as good manners. You held the door, you took off your hat, those types of things, all old school. But when we take that away and when we find that some of those things were insulting to or condescending to women, we've stopped doing that. And I don't think it's necessarily led to, you know, a fulfillment or an understanding of what you do next. I think it may have led to confusion. So if that is that valid, and if it is, what role does masonry perform for men that have that come to us with that turbulence in their personal lives?
That's an interesting way of thinking about it. Here's the way I look at that. I always try to be a glass half full kind of guy. And yes, I was raised in Scotland, and I called everybody who was over the age of 18, I called them Mr. Smith or Mr. Brown or whatever, or if they were friends of my dad's, I would call them, it was Uncle Andy, Uncle Frank, even though they weren't blood uncles. That's just, you didn't call my dad's friend Frank. To me, wasn't Frank. He was Uncle Frank, and he wasn't a relative. And that was out of respect, and you always held the door for ladies and stuff like that. But you know what? I think with masonry, what I've learned from masonry is, not only do I still hold doors for women when I can, I do it for men too. I think that's the beauty of the moral teachings that we have in masonry, is that, and when we say all men are created equal, it's mankind, womankind, however you look at it. And so, yes, I think we should still be holding doors open for women, but I think we should be holding doors open for men as well, and for seniors and for disabled folks and stuff. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, I agree with treating everybody equally. So I try to practice not treating women any differently than I do men, out of respect for what the, now, some things are ingrained back from when you're young, and sometimes you may do something for a woman, you know, just because that's the way it's the Pavlov dog thing, you know, the bell rings and you open the door or whatever like that. So I'm not saying, well, perfect at treating women exactly the same as we do men, but I think that should be our goal, and I think that's a worthy goal. And just to speak briefly, the thing I hear a lot is, you know, you're sexist, you don't let women in masonry. Well, first of all, I think the whole political correctness thing has kind of gone from one end of the spectrum to the other, and hopefully we can come back to the center, because masonry is a fraternity. Fraternity means a brotherhood, as a sorority means a sisterhood. Women would be absolutely offended if men were trying to join a sorority. And let me quickly say why I believe it's important for masonry to remain a fraternity. And every woman can relate to this. You have five guys in a room, and they're chatting, and everything's on an even keel, and everything's fine, and a woman comes into the room. The dynamics of that whole room change, and it's just a thing. Men can't be just men when there are women present. It does take away from the focus, and I'm not being sexist. I'm being realistic and truthful. And part of why masonry is a fraternity, one of the key points of our lessons in fraternity is to put your family and your friends and your fellow citizens first. And so we learn respect, we teach respect for family, and for women in general. You know, in our degrees, part of our oaths are about you know, upholding and protecting our mothers and sisters and children. And, you know, those are good things for men to learn. But it's hard to learn that kind of stuff, to teach men that kind of stuff, to get men to be sensitive and talk about those things when there's women present. And that's just a fact.
Do you think there's a bit of confusion out there? Because if I listened to a fellow being asked publicly about the fraternity excluding women, and when he started to talk, he was pretty sure, confident in his view that this is a male fraternity. But on the other hand, when the world that I live in and you live in, there are women Masons who have every bit of command of the craft, any Mason I might see. However, we have some of the constitutional requirements that are a bit different in the background. The public isn't too interested in that. But there are, in our area, in Toronto, we have very staunch female Masons who are quite comfortable. They're not looking for co-masonry at all. They're quite comfortable and committed and carrying on and the performance of masonry. Talk to us a bit about that confusion that might come out of.
That's true. So there is an organization called Women Freemasons, and they are here in Canada, and our Grand Lodge doesn't recognize their Grand Lodge. And again, it's nothing to do with sexism, but as you mentioned, this is a fraternity, and the fact that they're practicing masonry, I wish they were practicing their own version of masonry. Basically, what happened is they got a hold of our ritual and have just used the same thing. I think it would have been more suitable if they had have developed their own thing like Freemasonry. But having said that, do I have a problem with them? No, absolutely not. If these women, Freemasons in Canada, and again, they're not affiliated with our Grand Lodge, if their goal is to make their women better people, so as our motto is, we make good men better, if their motto is making good women better, then hey, how can you argue with that? It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Anytime anybody in the world is acting, as we in Masonry call it, acting for the cause of good, then who am I to say that's wrong? And it's not wrong. Everybody who works for the cause of good, and you don't have to be a Mason to be moral. We talk about morality in lodge, and that's our focus on what we do. But if you're not a Mason, doesn't mean you're not a moral person. Doesn't mean you're not a good person. Just as it means if you're a Mason, it doesn't mean you are a good person necessarily. I mean, you have to work at it. It's not like when you become a brother, you're bestowed with this magic, perfection or goodness. It's a work in progress, and every brother I know is a work in progress. Sometimes we do better than we do others. Although we do make good men better, I know no Mason in our jurisdiction or anywhere in the world that's perfect. I know we all strive for it, but I don't think any of us would say we're there. And if these women are doing the same thing, you know, great for them. And so I have no ill feelings towards them. I think it's great. Anybody trying to improve themselves should be applauded.
Now, just to, I see that our time has absolutely flown by today, Dan, and I am quite sure you realize that I have a many more questions I'd love to put to you, and perhaps we can do this again. But in all of that said, if you were going to summarize the experience of masonry and that cup half full type of type of attitude that you bring to life generally, what would you conclude about in the message to people that are curious about masonry? What would you say to them?
Well, I would, in my half cup way, I would say masonry to me has been one of the, and my family says the same thing, masonry has been good for me. Masonry has made me a better man. I know that, and my family knows that, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. Again, I get to hang out with like-minded men, friends, people like you and other Masons that I have I've got to know are now in my social circle. I really enjoy it. All I ask people is if you have questions about Freemasonry, come with an open mind. You know, if you think we rule the world, man, you're going to be really disappointed. You know, if you would see us, if you would come to the Waterloo Lodge building some night on a weeknight at, 5:30 or something when we're carpooling to go to another lodge, you could just sit in the parking lot and laugh because there'll be six guys carpooling to go to a lodge meeting in another city, and out of those six guys there'll be seven best ways to get there. So if you think we're running the world when we can't figure out how to get to a lodge in Elmira, that's another thing. But I ask you to look at it with an open mind. Masonry mm-hmm. is what you put into it. If you're interested in becoming a Mason, if you hear what we do and you like the idea, and you're interested in that kind of thing, masonry can be whatever you want it to be. You don't have to be involved as I am or as people like you are, Dale. You can be a regular lodge member. You don't need to be a master of a lodge or whatever. You can be just a regular Mason and be involved and do things. And that's great. There is something available in masonry for every man. And for the women, I think when your family members become Masons, I think you'll notice a difference, an appreciation for what masonry will do for them. And just come with an open mind, and if you have questions, again, we don't recruit people, and I think that's a good thing. And maybe, again, that's why our numbers have dropped, because we haven't recruited people. But then on the other hand, we've been around for more than 300 years, so if we don't recruit people and we're still around, we must be doing something right. So please come with an open mind and an open heart, and we would love to talk to you about Freemasonry.
Well, Dan, with that... That is just excellent. What a charming and frank summary for our conversation today. I want to take time to thank you on behalf of all of the listeners to Masonic Effects for your generous access and your candor in sharing ideas. And this has been unscripted, and I'm putting some questions to Dan that you can imagine are not easy to formulate, and you've heard, I think, a refreshing sense of a very open-minded person who is enjoying the experience of being a Master Mason. So again, Dan, thank you so very much. I look forward to seeing you soon. And we'll be in touch, I can assure you.
That we will. It's been great, Dale.
Thanks, Dan. And that was Worshipful Brother Dan Graham from Waterloo Lodge. we're going to end this episode, and I'll follow up with Dan offline. Thank you.